Last presentation of this morning's symposium is being presented by Paul Johnson from Utah State. Sustainable turfgrass management in an increasingly urbanized world. This is also a new chapter for the monograph. I would call it a new chapter. It started off kind of as an organic approach to turfgrass management, and it kind of evolved into this sustainable model for in an urbanized world. So other authors are Rossi and Horgan.
Well, like the other chapters are ours is a real team as well, with Frank and with Brian, and as I begin to prepare for this, I also realized, much like Greg, that it's been a long time since I've given an oral talk here, and I started thinking more like 13 years or longer. So I guess it's about time. Unlike the other chapters, this is a very different type of chapter. We don't have very much data. It's more kind of thought processes and that type of things. So I think you'll see that. That as we go along, and then finally, I'd like to also mention that I'm going to try and make this a sustainable presentation. In that, as a person who stutters, I usually have to try and plan for about 15 minutes worth of material for a half-hour presentation. So, I'm not like the extension people who can cram in about an hour into a half. Half hour. So, I'm sure many of you have seen this slide, and it's a good illustration of the point where we are right now, in that we now have more people who live in urban areas than in rural areas, and this is the first time that has happened in our civilization, and that's undoubtedly going to continue, especially in the developing parts of the world, and those urban areas, which we mostly live in, are often criticized as a source of crime and pollution and disease and a lot of the problems we deal with on a daily basis. But they're also the source of innovation and wealth. And because they are such an important, such a big part of our environment, they can't be ignored. And so they really need to be factored in with sustainability, with how we live, and so that's kind of where this is from coming from. We, as our turfgrass scientists, work with the turfgrasses and the urban landscapes, very unique because they are one of the few things that urban dwellers or can connect with the natural world. It allows us to have the intimate relationship with plants and the environment. But they also provide a lot of ecosystem services as well. Filtering water, providing oxygen, ecosystem services being the products and the services that the earth produces for us as humans, and they do that in a very unique and very difficult place in those highly disturbed urban areas, And so, as we know, these areas touch people daily, and millions of people daily, and they affect people physical ways, as well as providing a social social benefits of places to meet and to recreate and to socialize. Now those demands will obviously keep on increasing because we're going to keep getting more and more people into smaller areas or more and more people into the urban areas, and that's going to put a real demand on these areas, which do rely on our inputs, and they can be fairly energy intensive. But at the same time, those resources we have will tend to decrease over time. A chapter in a previous monograph, which is a exhaustive chapter, really excellent chapter, looking at the energy requirements in the things we do on our turfgrass areas, those will undoubtedly decrease at that same time. So, it's looking at these demands and how we work with them, to discussions and what makes a sustainable urban area, but it's critical if the inputs we provide take energy, if those don't increase those ecosystem services that they provide, the value of those activities and our turf grasses are going to be questioned. This chapter was a project of mine during a sabbatical, and so I got to see a number of different really poor athletic areas, and in these kinds of areas, it's real clear to see what those few inputs can really, what kinds of benefits they can provide. But we need to really show that value. Now, I like this book my brother-in-law gave me. We often talk a lot about turf, and he's real critical, and so he gave me this book. And when the term comes up, sustainable turf, people just say, that doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. We've got an unnatural plant community that is basically defined by people managing that. Because of that relationship, people automatically think, well, that must be a faulty system. However, what these stories don't include is that whole social impact of our turf areas. And so I do believe that sustainability and turf very much go together, and we expand upon that in the chapter. But what that involves are some trade-offs. It's a balance between, and I like this quote, and much like what Rock said, where he took a lot of literature from a wide range of areas, we did the same thing. We brought in a lot of different kinds of citations in it. And this quote from Kriva talking about urban landscapes in general really illustrates, I think, what that balance is, a balance between this balance will help guide us between reducing our impacts, but managing these areas so that we both we protect the environment and also help us as people to also thrive, and that becomes a balance. And that, as we talk about in the chapter, focuses on those decision processes mainly, the needs and activities we do, design, etc., and to consider not just the implications at your one site, but much broader than that as well. And doing that, though, however, can get pretty complicated. We saw this phrase brought up before: more with less. I love the cookbook. This is a great one. I often use it, reduce our impact on the food we use. But is doing more with less possible? Technically, no. You can't get more from a system by putting in less. But what the challenges are number one, to increase our creativity, and as I've seen a number of times, Frank as well has used the term the new normal, or adjusting or beginning to learn to live with new sets of conditions. And so our chapter, really, we didn't want to review every management practice. That would be an enormous chapter. All of the other chapters do that better than we could hear. So we focused more on a decision process, and we started with some we begin with some definitions, and then went into some decision points all through the management process, and identifying information gaps, evolving thoughts and research in this area, and then provided three case studies as well to illustrate how those decision processes might go. On the definition, we have a very broad one here by the United Nations, a relationship between humans and the environment to promote resource and conservation, one leg, economic integrity and social justice. Those three legs are common in most of these sustainability definitions. And number two is in our code, actually, in the U.S. Is part of the U.S. code, identifying what is meant by sustainable agriculture. And this is one that I kind of really, that we all I believe are kind of are struggling with some, because it doesn't include urban agriculture. It focuses on just on crops egg. But that's one of the popular definitions out there. They also have one on organic production as well. I won't really focus on that much, but the RNA has come up with a very good definition, I think, to identify what our goals are in a sustainable turf area. Again, it brings in the conservation aspect, the economic aspect, and the social aspect. And in light of those, it really begins to raise questions and make us think about every aspect of how we do things, of management inputs, the kinds of things we get out of it, environmental concerns, and it makes us carefully look at the use of turf itself. And in our chapter, again, we used three case studies, one on a pesticide use reduction, one with a low input cultivars, and then looking at water. And I'll go through these real briefly. The first one, pesticide use. This was the project that Frank Rossi was very involved with at the Bethpage golf courses, where he really looked, where they looked real carefully at the human dimension part, as well as the environmental environmental impacts on that site, and they measured those using an environmental impact quotient. They were looking at instituting IPM programs and bio-based type of pest pest management programs, and the outcomes of that really led to some on-site changes in that complex, the other golf courses found that they could reduce impacts, risk, and reduce risk by implementing some of the activities going on in this project, and they found that in most cases it met golfers' expectations, even though that there were some deductions in that quality and ball roll, but that even though there was some tolerance in that in reduced quality somewhat, they did not accept total a total failure. And so again, it's identifying that balance between the two. On the same notes, we use the case study of the LISP project or the low input sustainable turf project, looking at the people on those areas as the resources going in, and tried to change the decision process from taking a turf that's available and making it fit a certain site to train that around and start with what are the expectations on that area, what is the function on that area, and then choosing grasses to fit that have the lowest input requirements. And then finally, a project that I was involved with at the end, looking at water, where we looked at a large cool grounds, and evaluating what impacts water use on those areas. We, in our education programs, we often just go out there and say, if we give them information on how to irrigate better, that should help with our water conservation programs. However, in doing that, we sometimes forget to deal with the kinds of systems that they work with. And now, we did look at the irrigation system itself, and that had the biggest impact, or had a very large impact. But how the people in charge of those areas were educated really had a large impact as well, and was very informative to improving education programs, where in addition to giving them information, the why of that information is really critical. And simply creating and helping those irrigating be aware of the site and be aware of the irrigation itself had a large impact. And simply allowing them to be creative in how they do that made the most gains. So in conclusion, there's obviously a growing role of our turf in the urban areas as they get bigger and involve a lot more people. Yet, the concern out there on the environmental impacts are going to continue to challenge us. But I think that that's a good thing. But being sustainable is far more than just reaching for a bio-based product or a drought tolerant cultivar. It really involves decisions all along that process, and considering both what we use and how we do it, as well as what that has on the social systems we use and we have to work within in these urban areas. And if we don't, we need to be very careful, and history has a very good example of not being sustainable. Mesopotamia has a very well documented a case study, essentially, of unsustainable irrigation practices, a very flourishing civilization 3,000 years ago that basically died because of unsustainable irrigation practices. So we definitely have to consider these are questions because of the impacts can be rather dramatic. And with that, I will end. Any questions?
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Excellent. Thank you.
So we went from genetics, to some social sciences with extension, to some sustainability models. The monograph certainly has a lot to offer. I know my co-editors are pretty proud of the efforts that you all have put into these chapters. So we appreciate your time and energy on this, your patience, and look forward to having this published in 2012. Have a great rest of your conference this afternoon. I think we have one more session. And then safe travels home. Take care.